And welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Outside the snow is falling.
And yeah, that's public domain. We can sing that all we want. Oh. We could do an entire episode of Christmas carols.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And this podcast is now a Christmas carol podcast.
Yeah, I think our listenership would skyrocket. This is like Christmas for me. We're going to talk about the Beatles, Peter Jackson's new documentary, Get Back. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. So we'll try not to blather too much. That's why I've got some notes here to help contain me.
Yeah, you do to you.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we're going to talk about episode 1 of 3. And so I'll give some background for people who don't know the story behind it. And I'll try to be quick. Well, this will be the Reader's Digest version. This will be the Cliff's Notes.
The Beatles Digest?
Exactly. So, 1964, the Beatles signed a 3-picture deal with United Artists. And that resulted in Hard Day's Night that year, the movie, and Help the next year. They got pretty bored making Help and didn't really have a whole lot of enthusiasm about going back and making more movies. So, and plus it kept them out of the studio. So they did a TV movie, 67, called Magical Mystery Tour.
Woof.
Which was largely unscripted, kind of off the cuff, about an hour long. It was released on Christmas Day in England. Next year, they did Yellow Submarine Cartoon, to which they only contributed the music. They didn't even do their own voices for that. So United Artists said, we don't count either of those. You still owe us one more movie.
Interesting.
On your 3-picture deal.
A dick move to tell them after the fact.
Yeah. And so, but they're just trying to squeeze more money out of them.
Yeah.
And so Paul McCartney has the idea after the White Album. During the White Album, they didn't get along at all. A lot of arguing, a lot of bickering. That was probably the time period of their ugliest fighting was the White Album.
Yeah, because didn't and Ringo was when he left.
Ringo quit for 2 weeks during the White Album. George Martin quit for a while during the White Album.
But that's arguably their best album, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's in my opinion.
Oh yeah, it's like arguing you're like the best painting from like a classic painter. It's like everybody's got their opinions. To me,
it's good. No, I like it a lot.
I love the White Album. It's their most abstract.
Yeah,
to use the painting metaphor, their most abstract work, where it's like you've got like acoustic stuff like Blackbird and Mother Nature's Son and Julia sitting next to like Helter Skelter and Birthday and
Revolution. Raccoon.
Yeah.
Revolution number 9.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a weird mix. And George's like, social commentary songs, but then also George's While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happiness is a Warm Gun. It's like, it's got a weird collage of songs that all kind of, they hang together weird, like a crazy, like Picasso painting. It's their strangest or Salvador Dali. It's like their wildest. Everything else they did is pretty cohesive. Even Let It Be is a pretty cohesive album in terms of the songs. But it was their ugliest fighting. They really, I think, were feeling the absence of Brian Epstein, their manager. And so there a lot of beefs came up between Paul and George, between John and Paul, between John and George.
Poor Ringo.
Yeah. And Ringo got sick of it.
Yeah. You could tell in this, in the first documentary, he didn't even look like he wants to be there.
Yeah.
He's just like,
Ringo?
Ringo's face always looks like he doesn't.
That is true. That is true.
He has a very sad, natural expression. Yeah. So Paul McCartney comes up with the idea of to help satisfy the contract and maybe to help boost morale, they should do a documentary, bring in a film crew, all that to help videotape them rehearsing for their next album. And so also to cap that off with a live performance at the end of it. Their first live performance since 66.
Yeah.
First actual concert. And so basically, as a result of that, the director, Michael Lindsay Hogg, films hundreds of hours of audio and video combined of that. Get tons of footage of them, rehearsing, screwing around, arguing, yada yada, procrastinating.
Yeah.
And that is ultimately assembled into the documentary Let It Be. Which is, I think, maybe an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty short.
Pretty condensed.
And it focused more on the concert, the actual release.
The rooftop.
The rooftop, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a rooftop?
Rooftop. Spoiler alert.
Well, I see the first episode.
Mm-hmm. And so very little of that footage has been released. So Peter Jackson, the director of Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, King Kong, et cetera, et cetera.
They will never grow old.
They will never grow old. was given access to all of his footage from the vaults. And so the movie They Shall Not Grow Old was a World War One, basically where they restore footage from that time period of 1918 back to like full high definition. And so they did the same process with this movie. They went through for 4 years. He spent like bringing all this stuff up to 4K, you know, HD audio. And so it was planned to be a movie 2020. COVID delayed it. And so they decided to do it as a 3-part, 9-hour miniseries on Disney Plus. So that's the backstory.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, full disclosure, I'm a Beatles fanatic, lifelong nutball. For the Beatles, favorite band of all time.
Yeah,
they're the band that got me into music.
So. Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual Beatles anthology, 7th grade, disc 2, was like when I started listening to some of their like outtakes, and I was like, who the fuck is this band? And it was like the anthology too.
Yeah.
It was like right when that whole thing came out on ABC.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all came out. And I was like, what are the Beatles? Mm-hmm. And what do they do?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is pretty freaking cool.
I was a Monkees fan before I was a Beatles fan.
Oh, that's sad.
Really? I know. I'll admit to that. I mean, we're talking
their show's better.
Yeah, they had a better TV show. But I was.
Was there a particular song that like got you on the Monkees?
I liked them all. I mean, I liked the Last Train to Clarksville, and you know, there's obviously their theme song. But yeah, they had some weird B deep sides too that were
Sleepy Jean.
Yeah. I mean, they had some good stuff, I thought.
They did.
But, you know, guilty pleasure now.
Yeah.
But I got into them about a little bit, maybe 6th grade, 7th grade, somewhere in there. But it was like I had access to the blue and red greatest hits albums that they did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those were the first ones I had.
Yeah. And I was hooked.
And then I burned the Beatles White Album from Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Tech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, MP3, Napsters.
Yeah. the good old days.
Yeah. LimeWire.
Yeah.
The good old days.
Pirating music.
Yeah. LimeWire is for porn.
Mm-hmm. You can do both.
You do music?
Yeah.
Wow.
You could.
Now you could do, I mean, you could have music for your porn.
It's a dual threat.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm loving this. You know, I enjoyed every minute of it. It's stuff that I've never seen before, which is unusual because I could safely say that I've seen just about everything related to them video-wise that was out there. So, super fan. I'm curious to see what you guys thought.
Yeah.
So we'll start with Tay, because Tay, you're also a big Beatles fan.
Yeah, so I'm just very same. I might not have the knowledge that Todd has. In fact, half the time when Todd and I talk, he's telling me things that I didn't know about. I'm just like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
No.
So, I mean, knowing the Let It Be story for me, it was like, I spoiler alert, I knew what happened with the Beatles, but also I kind of knew what kind of the inter story was, like what was going on, all the fights and stuff like that. But it was really cool just to see it like come to life. Cause I think I'd only saw Let It Be one time and it was like, I mean, it might've been pirated as well. So like, I've only seen the original film one time. And I remember seeing it very young and being like, well, they're not really playing music. They're just kind of arguing and
screwing around.
Yeah. I was like, this is weird. And I didn't really appreciate it. I would love to see it again if I could find it anywhere.
Yeah.
But the coolest thing of this was just seeing the process of the Beatles, which I'm sure the original film kind of had. Mm-hmm. But I think that what I've liked, I've only seen the first one, full disclosure.
Yeah.
The process of the music making and also just how freaking burnt out the Beatles must have been. I mean, and I think I had mentioned to Travis, like, at the time, what John would have been 29?
Mm-hmm.
29. So
George is 26.
26. It was like
25.
Yeah, 25.
They're freaking kids.
Yeah, it's like exactly. Yeah. And it's like, and you've been doing this since. I mean, they've been together since what?
14 years old.
Like 57.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're probably like, I think we're about done. Like I've seen your fucking faces for over a decade now. And it was like we've been together nonstop. Like if you a simple Google or Wikipedia, when you see their albums being released, it's like, when did you record these? Like, did you guys ever have a break for 10 years?
They were
like,
writing in hotel rooms.
Yeah, it's just insane. And so that to me was a more, like, I knew they probably hated each other, but until you actually see it, you're like, whew, like, it fits what's going on right now, at least in my opinion with some TV, it's like the cringeworthy episodes, you know, where you're like, ugh. Like when John and George are kind of going at it about like, when, you know, George is like, oh, he's like, well, I can't play that. It's like, I'm not Eric Clapton. I can't do that. Okay. And I was like, ooh. And I was, and he tells me, hey, I don't have to play it. I don't have to.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think George is, I mean, which we know he was, like, he was just done with it.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
And, you know, Another cool thing in that was, I think he did play in the first one, All Things Must Pass, mm-hmm. yeah. which it was like, he's like playing it for him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he released that like a year later, mm-hmm. like when his first album. And it's so crazy. I didn't know that. Yeah. He actually played it in there with them. And they were like, on to the next song. It's yeah. like it's a huge song for George Harrison. And they're like, yeah, we're going to do something else.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But that's unreal.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing in this first episode, you know, just all the audio stuff, I actually just fucking loved it. But the coolest thing was seeing Paul McCartney produce Get Back.
On the fly. 2 minutes.
Just starts playing the bass, mm-hmm. and then you can see like George getting into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Ringo,
okay.
they're both like,
and then
they
Ringo
can
gets over there. Yeah. And it was like,
and then no, but the thing is, like, they wrote it while John was late, and John yeah. just like walks in. He's just like picks up his guitar, looks and over, just, and he's just like,
yeah, and starts playing too. And I was like, oh, like fuck. I was like, God dang. And I think that gives a huge credit to how they actually work together, where they're just like, okay. It was like, you know, we can do this all together. Like, we know each other enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I think John and Paul were like singing together. They were doing the lines. Like, oh, this, you know, I think George asked, does this line work? I think it was I, me, mine.
Mm-hmm.
He was like,
grammatically.
Yeah. I was like, does this work grammatically? And it was just kind of cool. It's such a shame when you see that how much they probably hated each other. Mm-hmm. But then, like, those few moments where they're just like,
yeah.
Okay, they are so in sync musically.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought John and Paul were going to kiss at one time. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right before, spoiler alert, George was like, all right, I think I'm going to leave the band.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yeah. You just see John and Paul, like, you know, a foot away from each other's face and be like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, that works. Or wait, try this. Mm-hmm. And they just show a quick montage of that. And George just being like,
Yeah.
Yeah, George is just over in the corner, bullshit. Just kind of steaming.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll pass it along because I'm like, Todd, I can keep talking about this. But the best thing in this first episode, besides Paul and the was Ringo. Ringo, I think, maybe had 30, 40 words in this first one.
Maybe.
But the best one is when he came, it was very early on in the episode. He comes in and everyone's, it's like early on, I think it's like second day rehearsal, third day.
Yeah.
He just kind of comes in, he looks around, and he's like, well, I won't lie to you. I'm not doing well. And I just see Ringo and like everyone starts laughing and I'm dying laughing because I'm just like thinking Ringo the night before, like, well, let's see, tomorrow I'm going to go play drums, and I'm not going to have anything to write. I can have a few more pints, you know, just knocking back the pints. And it was just like, that to me was like, that just also set up the Beatles. It's like how, yeah. even though Ringo was a part of it, but he knew goddamn well. He yeah. was just like, I ain't doing shit tomorrow.
Yeah, I heard whenever they were like, yeah, has anybody else ever left the band? They were like,
yeah, Ringo,
seriously? Oh, Ringo did. Yeah. I'm like, why the fuck did he do that?
Yeah.
He's, you know, riding a gravy train with biscuit wheels. Like, yeah. he seems to be doing all right, making money, but, like, God, with that sad, sallow face and that modicum of talent, question mark? I don't know.
Well, I think
Ringo's a great drummer.
Yeah, he's honestly, a great caveman yeah. in that one film that he also was in yeah. that I've saw twice.
This
yeah.
gave me a new appreciation for Ringo.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's a laid-back, a cool guy, but,
yeah.
I mean, he's a... He's definitely standing on the shoulders of giants in that room.
Yes, good album.
Oasis yeah. reference, who are, I think, partly inspired by the Beatles a little bit.
Just a scotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they looked up to them a little bit.
I believe Liam Gallagher's quote was when he was singing a song, he's like, yeah, I was singing in the spirit of John Lennon, wow. That is having a few wines. John Lennon crept inside me. I'm like, that's weird.
That's weird.
That's
got to be a better way to
yeah.
say that.
I was like, yeah. What's weird?
Just blew myself.
Yeah. I blew myself.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, one thing, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's like about the Gallagher. Somebody asked him, like, they were two sitting there together. And it's like, did you ever think about starting a Beatles cover band? One of them's like, well, I think we already are.
Yeah.
So my favorite part on this, also, yeah, the birth of Get Back was cool, but like, also, Paul showed up early one day and he was like, "All right, I guess I'll go get, you know, loosened up, hit the piano," and he's busting out like "Let It Be," "Across the Universe," yeah. and "Long and Winding Road."
Mm-hmm.
And what's so cool, seeing like the inception and the idea of all that, is that like you know the notes and the words to the song. And he's like just trying and working out, and I'm like, nope, you're fucking up. Oh nope, that note's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, oh, is that really the lyrics you're gonna try? I was like, that's not quite right. And you want to like jump in and be like, no, this is how
that's
it goes.
That's not the song I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just want to help him out. But the director of this, I don't know about you guys, I thought he was a fucking chode.
Yes.
Michael something?
Yes, he does not come across.
Yeah, he's the American director, I guess, that's shown up and like, here's what we got to do. So what's the thought on this? So what's the, he's just like.
It really seemed that he wanted the free trip. It was like, it was like, he just kept saying like, I just think you're the Beatles. And I'm like, bro.
Wouldn't it be cooler if we were in Ibiza?
Yeah. And like, you know.
It's or just, an orphanage. She suggests an orphanage.
Yeah.
Like, how would that play?
How would that play?
An orphanage? You know, not something too sad. We want something just like, I don't know.
Or what about children with their legs chopped off? Like, not the second floor, obviously. We'll take the first floor.
Yeah.
So they don't have to limp down.
Like, what the hell was that?
He was a fucking goober.
Yeah.
Now, their road manager I thought was cool. Mal, the really tall guy with the weird mop hat.
Yeah. Like, a mop hat and the fringe.
Yeah. He'd been with them since the very beginning.
But he did the Maxwell's silver. Mm-hmm.
That was cool, too.
But he was...
Full disclosure,
I've seen the rest of the episodes, but like... He's my favorite, like, other side character that shows up. I'm just like, anytime he shows up, he's my Kendrick Perkins of the Thunder. I'm
he's a glue guy.
Like, fuck yeah. I'm like, here he comes. He's just, he looks like a big, like, teddy bear I'd like to hug.
Yeah.
But that was my favorite part, was just seeing Paul at the piano and then coming up with those tunes. I'm like, holy shit. And then the other one was George Harrison showing up. And he was like, oh, yeah, I wrote this song. And he starts playing I Me Mine.
It's just like, I wrote this last night.
This is one of my favorite, obscure Beatles songs that, like, doesn't get enough love, I feel.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, I fucking love this one. And then John's just bagging on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, like,
do you even
like,
know what we do here?
He's like, we're a rock and roll band, man.
Yeah. You know, get the net.
Yeah.
It's not very rock and roll.
The net hasn't been invented yet, John.
Yeah.
Odd insult. All right, that's me. Go, Sean.
I thought it was kind of cool to see the business side of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, everything that you guys said, absolutely true. Seeing their musical process was incredible. But seeing kind of the beginning threads of Apple as a company, not Apple, you know, but
Apple Corps
mm-hmm. of, you know, talking about, oh, we just purchased the right to 4,000 of these songs and we're going to start printing sheet music. And I think one of them is just like, why would we print sheet music?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, trust me, this is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. He's like, who wants, teachers?
Yeah, he's like piano
players.
He's
so incredulous.
Yeah. He was like, what?
Looking back at that now, it's like, oh my God, this is like...
It was huge.
The start of how music became so ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And to think that there was a time that wasn't a thing, and two, they were ahead of it. That was incredible. And just hearing their business manager kind of talk about just like, you know, the points, it's like, there's no wonder that Ringo and Paul McCartney are both worth like... What, 800 million pounds?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're
loaded.
Just super loaded. Well, and it started right here. You know, it wasn't just the music. They knew that the music wasn't going to be the only thing to sustain them. They knew that they had to diversify and kind of strike while the iron was hot. And it's cool to see it happening in live action, you know, hearing all those conversations happening away from the music.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you know, getting to see Paul, like, kind of direct the business a little bit and seeing John and George just kind of like not be as involved in it,
mm-hmm.
and then be off on the side and be creative autistic types.
Yeah, and not giving a shit
about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, so I asked, keep going.
Well, I was going to say, because it kind of seemed like John and Paul had their names on everything.
Yeah.
And then George and Ringo were just kind of off on the side, just kind of watching, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it, is that, like, that was Dick James, the publishing manager, who they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he owned the company Northern Songs, which owned the Beatles catalog.
Which is worth, you know, billions.
Yeah.
Billions.
Which later passed on to Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson, yep. Yeah.
And then later, when he got in financial trouble, got absorbed by Sony.
Mm-hmm.
So Sony, I believe, is now the majority owner of Northern Songs.
So how did Disney get the rights to this, to produce this documentary?
I'm guessing through just sheer power of money.
Yeah.
I think they just had
the
muscle to do it. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they can do what they want.
So let me get this right. The Beatles, still, I would say, the largest band at the time.
Stones were coming. You know,
Stones were huge.
Were Stones ever bigger than Beatles, though?
I love the part where they were like, Well, the Beach Boys got 8-track. Why can't we get 8-track?
And the microphones? They're like, well,
this is my line of questioning.
Yeah.
Can't they get the fucking top-line microphones?
Seriously? Yeah. They have two microphones taped to each other.
Can't they get a fucking 8-track tape? Well, if George Harrison wants one, they'll be like, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Well, I think it goes back to that line that even Paul was, once we lost Brian, it's like we lost away.
The negotiator.
Yeah, and it was they were bitching and complaining about, the whole entire first episode, they're just bitching about the room they're in,
the PA system, and the acoustics.
And they never go anywhere.
You guys know you have the most market power of any band in the world right now. You could be anywhere.
And
you just happened to use this studio that's free.
And George brought in his own 8-track
equipment,
and he was
like 10,000 pounds. Or 10,000
quid's like a dollar, or buck, whatever. Yeah. It's just a slang for that. But I was like, it was just so cool that it was like he brought his own, and it was cool. But I'm like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. This is the Beatles, right?
I'm sorry.
I know they haven't toured in 3 years, but I know it's a small role.
I did. I liked where he looked up. He was like, "Be careful with that, please. Thank you."
Though he didn't move at all, he was just like,
"I noticed." So the one thing I saw in and the thing I think was really fascinating about this was getting to see their interpersonal relationships, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they shit on George a lot, which I was like, oh.
Yeah, they did. Like, they shit on George a lot.
Which I think he's an excellent writer. But it was just kind of interesting to see it.
Yeah. But is that, to me, Paul McCartney, kind of a dick. Kind of like he's trying to fill the shoes. I get it. We all love Paul McCartney. But in the room, I'm just like, all right, he's trying to be everybody's mother.
Yeah.
He's trying to, herding cats or whatever.
He's trying to be the point man.
But he's, lead. He doesn't stop talking.
He doesn't give anybody else room to breathe.
Paul, you need to
shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Every once in a while.
Shut the fuck up.
They didn't have a no man in there. They seem to be
surrounded by yes men.
Yes, and their Epstein guy was the one person that they said was daddy.
They looked up
to. Could come in and get things done and, do all that. But Paul, I wanted him to shut the fuck up.
Well, and they kind of talked about it. They were like, once Epstein died, they wanted to manage themselves. And that makes sense, though. You can't imagine somebody coming in from the outside that hadn't grown up with them coming in and trying to manage the Beatles.
Tell them what to do.
Because, one, you don't know them. Mm-hmm. Two, they are powerhouses economically and, musically, to where anybody else who wasn't there from the beginning is never going to be able to control them. And so it makes sense that they don't have a manager. But at the same time, they definitely needed a manager.
Somebody.
They needed somebody real bad because Paul was overpowering and John was just kind of there.
No.
Yeah. And Yoko was.
Oh, good Lord.
I think this is a whole different discussion, which I think we'll take a quick break and then we'll get back into it. Because I think we're getting into a kind of what I consider the meat of the episode, which is the conflict with George and the other Beatles. Yes. The big drama of that. And so we're going to take a quick break and then
we're going to beat the meat.
And then we're going to discuss which Beatle is Golden Girl.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm Ringo.
Oh. Wait, no.
Rose is Ringo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Rose.
Okay.
Yep.
I think I'm Dorothy. I hate to say it.
Dorothy.
But is Dorothy George?
I think so.
Yeah.
Really?
The snarkiest? I mean, I don't know. John has some Dorothy, too.
I would say John would be the we're going to get into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
Whole, Michelangelo? Whole other barrel
Michelangelo, market. Ringo, Rose.
John Leonardo.
And we'll be back
after these messages. If you're interested in starting your very own podcast, Blueberry is one of the top hosting companies in the world. You can get your first month free with Blueberry by using the promo code CinemaVino. You can also use the hosting estimator on their site to determine the best plan for you. And don't forget, that's CinemaVino to get your first month free. And we are back. So we're going to talk a little bit about the wine that we're drinking. I picked something that I thought that fit the theme of the movie. We got Conclusion Pinot Noir because this is the last album released by the Beatles. Next to last album recorded.
Penultimate.
Yes, exactly. That's a good word.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get more into that and the Abbey Road album, which you will hear parts of throughout this documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Being played.
And for most of the second half, we're going to be speaking in our best Beatles accents.
Liverpool accent.
Help us.
Yeah, we've had about two more glasses of wine. I remember at the wine store, I like to answer the phone periodically with the Liverpool accent.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Rant Jacobs. How can I direct you cool?
Back lounge.
But yeah, we're drinking Conclusion Pinot Noir because this is like the Beatles. This is basically the final act of the Beatles, both this Let It Be and Abbey Road. And director's cut because this is Peter Jackson's vision of what the Let It Be sessions were. So he gets to basically cut his own version of it.
Peter.
Oh, Peter Jackson, that's very good. You direct the Hobbits, don't you?
There's little people.
I kind of give Peter Jackson some credit because I love Guillermo del Toro, but he starts so many projects and then has to abandon them for other shit. Peter Jackson will spend...
Just like, as one thing.
Yeah, yeah. For one
and
thing.
And puts out like a 10-hour epic.
Yeah, he will give you the palatable, like the morsel, but he will also produce like the huge one. He's like, all right, I'll give the public their version, but I'm going to also hold mine back and reserve like for the super nerds that want all the DVD extras.
And I will watch that.
And yes. He will spend 4-5 years. Like he didn't want to do all the extra 3 Hobbits. But he was like, fuck, nobody else can do it. All right, I'll do that too.
Yeah.
Even though, I'm sorry, they were kind of dog shit.
Yeah.
But
he didn't need to be 3 movies.
Yeah.
2 at most.
So these
Smaug was great.
Smaug.
These 2 Pinot Noirs are great for Christmas, you know, holiday meals. And the Pinot Grigio, we did A to Z Pinot Gris. Also good if you're doing like Christmas dinner, yada, yada. Kind of easy, floral, you know. Little lightly fruity. I think these are nice little Pinot Noirs. The Coppola director's cut, you know, it has some nice body to it for Pinot Noir. It has some nice oomph.
Yeah, it's a Cali. Nice. It's a Cali Pinot. Mm-hmm. A little more oomph.
Is that the same Coppola that does the rosé?
Yeah,
I really like that rosé. That's probably my favorite.
Yeah, both Francis.
Oh, Francy.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I pick stuff that I think we'll do that from the rest of the year's holiday centric stuff that will match up with whatever you're doing for whatever holiday you choose to celebrate. So
I don't know why I left.
We're in the middle of Hanukkah right now.
Yeah, I think Hanukkah started on Sunday.
Yeah,
right?
We're like 4 days deep.
Did it really?
It starts with a C. It started yesterday. It's Chanukkah.
Okay. Wow. I only know the Adam Sandler version.
Yeah,
of that.
Easy.
Oh. Wow. Wow.
Eight crazy.
Oh my God! I'm sorry.
Wow.
Wow.
So
whoa.
A few things. Oh, it's quite preposterous, really.
So who is the Brit? Who'd be the British Matthew McConaughey? I was like,
Ringo.
John.
I want that sound you just made to be my text tone when you text me.
Oh, we never got that.
Like, it sounded like Jay Leno.
Wait, no, I'm sorry.
The headlines.
Oh, Owen Wilson. Who is the British Owen Wilson?
Ringo.
Wow. So Ringo is just every American actor.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, strong to mid-strong.
We need to go back before we get into anything else. We need to touch on which Golden Girl is which Beatle. Or which Beatle is which Golden Girl, I guess.
Ringo is Rose.
Yes.
Is Michelangelo.
Pretty straightforward.
George is Sophia.
Yeah.
Is George Raphael?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
A little too Raph.
I would say so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Paul Leonardo?
Yeah.
And Dorothy?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think John be Donatello, because John is smart.
But I think Paul would be Donatello.
But John doesn't give a shit towards the end. John's just like, whatever.
You're right.
I don't give a fuck.
You're right. You're right.
And it was like, and so I think he's just like, whatever. I'm going to kind of have fun, do whatever. But like, clearly Paul is wanting to keep everything together.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonardo's just like, guys, we've got to stick together. And they're like, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, we're out of here.
Yeah. So that would make him the Dorothy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
George Martin, the Splinter.
Oh, no doubt.
Oh, I thought Stein was.
Yeah.
Epstein.
Was, yeah, that's true. They did lose their splinter. Yeah. That's why they splintered.
Wow. And Mal was like Casey Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or April.
So Ringo is Rose.
Mm-hmm. John is Dorothy.
Dorothy.
Paul is Blanche.
Yeah.
Blanche.
Mm-hmm. Well, Blanche and Donatello.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then George is.
Oh, no. Sophia. John Sophia. Was Donatello.
George is Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that.
George comes across, he's the youngest, but he comes across the oldest and crankiest in this documentary, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that.
So far.
Yes, so far.
So on that, I mean, the George beef.
So, and people I've texted people about this, and they've texted, like, about how the Beatles at various points don't come across, except for Ringo, don't come across very well during this. And it was like, my thought was,
Ringo's an angel.
Yes. He's a sweetheart. That we're basically coming into the situation like mid beef because it's carrying over from the previous album. And it's like, you're walking in during an argument that's already in progress. Nobody's going to look good at that point when everybody's already pissed.
Yeah, it's almost like watching a play that's like in the middle where you're just like expected to catch up really quickly.
You're coming in the second act. Yeah. You kind of know that there's a little bit of history, but you don't know what.
Yeah. And also when the documentary starts, you know, I watched it with my wife and she wasn't a huge fan when we got together, but she, by osmosis via me, because if you're married to me, you have no choice to become a fan. Her fandom has increased a lot, and so she knows a lot more about them. But I turned to her watching this, and I was like, they're setting themselves up for failure when it starts off, and they're talking about how they're coming together for like 2 weeks to learn songs for a concert that they have to like master these songs, learn them well enough to play them live in the span of 2 weeks. And that's 2 months of work at least that they're cramming into this 2 weeks. And like you guys said earlier, I don't get it. How, if you're the Beatles, how do you not just do whatever you want? It's like,
yeah, we're going to fuck you.
Yeah. You'll get it in March when we're ready. Yeah. You know, it's like, and then that, yeah, if you're anybody who isn't like, yes, sir, whatever you need, you know, it's like at that point when this came out, they had like 23 number one songs.
Yeah.
It's like, and within the span of like 5 years, it's like, whatever you want. You need it in March? Done. Yes, sir. Yeah. So I don't get this like 2 week deadline.
Well, yeah. The only thing I can think of with that is like, they kind of made it real early on in the episode. George says something about, he made something about breaking up. And Paul even said, it's like, well, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can think of is like, they're just like, we got to do this now because if we have a break, we're like, well, hey guys, let's go on holiday for a month. You know, ain't none of them coming back. And so the only thing I can think of is like, we got to knock this out now because we are fucking done after this.
Well, we just watched The Last Waltz and a recurring theme through that was just like, we've been on the road for 16 years, fucking sick of
exhausted.
These people.
Yeah.
I don't want to be around these people. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant theme with musicians. I mean, you still see it today, is that bands that have been around for this long are fucking sick of each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
it's close quarters.
You have to be so intimate with these people for years, just nonstop writing music, recording music, touring, performing live. And then it's a vicious circle. You just keep doing that forever on end. It's your job. But you also have to be so intimately like with those people for like 12 hours a day, nonstop.
Yeah.
I was honestly surprised that as they were showing this calendar, they're like, oh yeah, they didn't work Saturdays or Sundays. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
They had weekends?
Yeah.
Like musicians don't have weekends.
So normally they were showing up around 11. And if they worked 10 or 11, all day, they would work until maybe 7. But mostly from what I have gathered, they were like showing up at 11 maybe,
which is,
and then
honestly,
leaving at around 3:30.
That's early for musicians.
Yeah,
I mean, when they're talking about like, oh, John doesn't show up until like after 11.
As I was watching this, I was like, I so badly wanted my organizational skills. I was like, can we get these dudes a fucking whiteboard, man?
Yeah.
Write the songs that you know on there.
Because
they were like, how many songs do we have? 3, 4? What's the one? And then the one that goes, and they would immediately
shambles.
Forget.
John just has a piece of paper taped over his microphone, just reading off of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're fucking up the audio balance. We're like, could you put that literally anywhere else?
Can you
right
not.
In front.
And so during the White Album, Paul's bossiness came out full force. And that was a big source of friction between Paul and George and Paul and John. And that is kind of what ultimately led, one of the several things that are going on in this documentary that led the group breaking up. You can see it early on here where Paul is directing Ringo how to play the drums.
Oh, yeah.
Paul is directing George on what he wants for lead. And you can see George, you could just fry an egg on George's face when Paul is telling him like how he wants him to play. It's like, you know, and I think that George's response about Eric Clapton's is pure sarcasm of like, you don't want me, clearly you want somebody else. You know, it's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and like, you can see that there's just like not good chemistry there. And you look at the writing credits, everything is going to
Lennon McCartney,
mm-hmm. which apparently that was an arrangement that like yes. anything that they wrote, both of them got put on.
Yes.
Right.
Before they ever got famous.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot of Paul.
It was a lot of Paul, but those credits kept coming up, and I was like, mm-hmm. Lennon McCartney, and I was like, I don't see much Lennon. I see a lot of McCartney.
Well, and that was one of the cool things, is like one of those quick audios. They were like, oh, and it wasn't even the Beatles. They were like, oh, well, George is upset. And they're like, well, you know, it's like, because, you know, John and Paul are writing the songs, and then even some guy chimed in, and I was like, well, John and Paul haven't written a song in years. It's like, yeah, but that's the arrangement.
Yeah.
And it was like, so yeah, I was like, that's so cool. That was like a little clip. Uh-huh. It was like, oh, George is upset. But it's like, yeah, but these guys haven't written songs together in years. Yeah.
So I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan too. And as you've seen over their albums, they change and they get into like all other like weird instruments and shit, kind of like the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to see them evolve over time. And the great thing about Led Zeppelin is, to me, is that you can have your super hard songs like Rock and Roll, but then you also have like Battle of Evermore, and they're on the same album,
mm-hmm.
and they're totally different. Which is why I love all the George Harrison songs on there too. Yeah, I didn't realize that his were some of the slower, more somber ones, but like. To switch back and forth, I don't know. If you have Paul McCartney write every single song, every single album, every single track,
mm-hmm.
it's just going to sound like more Paul McCartney.
Well, and Led Zeppelin had an arrangement that all of the writing credit went to the band Led Zeppelin.
That's how U2 is also.
Yeah. Well, let's not use U2 as a model for success, but sure.
Yeah. But that's how
they've been around for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
U2?
Yeah.
At least 14 albums.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, all the extra chefs in the ingredient, like it's all good, it's all gravy. But it seemed like Paul McCartney was very much a stickler of like he was a little too controlling. Like he knew how he had it orchestrated already in his head, and he was just trying to translate it. But he was not the best at translating that.
And you saw it come out where he was just like, I'm not trying to like lecture you. I'm not trying to like be that way. I don't want to be this way.
But
George is like, but you are. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not mad. I just like, let's get through this. Let's work. Let me actually talk and we can actually be part of the creative process. And Paul was like, well, no. I want to do it this way. This is the way I want to do it.
And here's what got me about that on the George and John fronts was that George had felt this way for a year and had not said anything to Paul. And obviously Paul is bossy and he comes across, I think, as condescending to the other people in the group. But George let that slide for a year until it got to this point and boiled over. And to me, it almost kind of shows an immaturity in George where he gets up and says, I'm out.
Yeah.
To where it's like, things aren't going my way, I'm going to storm out. I'm taking my ball and I'm leaving.
And again, he's fucking 27, 28, 29.
He's a young guy.
He's a child.
He's the youngest of all of them.
Yeah, he is.
But it does seem like they're talking in circles because they always circle back. Yeah. They're like, all right, what kind of show we're going to do? And then Paul's going off. He's like, yeah, and you remember back when we played in Hamburg? It was just, it was incredible. It was fantastic. And we were all like, whoa. And then they were all like, yeah. And then everybody was just, you know, all sort of spacey and in a different world. And it was great, you know, but it wasn't. And then it was still good. And it was like, what
was that?
Yeah.
People are talking, but no one's communicating.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that, like, Ringo was the one that stonewalled going international. He was just like, no, I'm not going abroad.
Yeah. Because of his stomach, ironically. Yeah. He couldn't handle international food.
Yeah.
It's just not bland enough.
Yeah.
Well, like, and I love that George's whole thing was like, I want to go home after.
Mm-hmm.
Like his whole, like, why he nixed everything, he's like, I want to do the show and then go home.
He's a homebody.
And he was like, and they're like, well, you can go home. And he's like, yeah, like fucking 3 days later.
Yeah.
But I was like, I love that George is just like, no.
You want to go on a cruise ship?
Yeah. He was like, I want to do the show and I want to go straight home.
3 days there, 3 days back with a whole bunch of weirdo fans.
Like, that's how Gilligan's Island started.
Yeah.
Guys, if I can do a quick aside, which Beatle, after having seen this, would you want to sit down and like hang out with
John
and like
Lennon,
have a beer with
John fucking Lennon?
I would.
Yeah.
For me,
really?
Damn it!
Mm-hmm.
Any one of them except for Paul. Actually, I want to have a beer with all of them. I want to tell Paul to calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
I want to say, Ringo, you're chill. I enjoy you. I want to help. I feel like I want to give a piece of bread to George and just like give him a hug or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to hang out with John.
John just came away just uninvolved.
Very passive.
Because I think he was done. So yeah.
He was.
Yeah, he was done.
Well, and supposedly sometime during this documentary, John and George got into a physical altercation. I don't believe they're going to show it during this.
Like sexy?
Well, like a fight.
Oh.
Because George was furious. And then they talk about at the end of this first episode where they meet with George after he's quit.
Yeah, and it did not go well.
And
that's how it ends.
I did like the cliffhanger because they did say John,
will be back
Ringo,
part two.
With Yoko and Linda.
That's, yeah.
Why in the fuck would that, why is that even a thing? And, and I knew that was a big thing too. It's like, why the fuck is Yoko and Linda here all the fucking time?
Well, yeah, I guess, like, I mean, I'm sure Ringo's wife was there, right?
No,
just Yoko and Linda.
She was on set at least once, but like.
She shows up
at Ringo's house because
for the meeting.
Ringo's.
Yeah.
I would expect she'd be at Ringo's house.
What was I saying? George,
she was actually very beautiful, by the way.
George's wife,
Ringo's.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, that's Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah,
fuck.
That's
yeah,
his second wife. This was his first wife. So he was married to a different woman.
Yeah, she's very pretty.
Yeah, cool. Lovely woman.
So is Linda. Mm-hmm.
Huh? Yeah. And so yeah, I think
Yoko screamed too much.
My opinion is that, you know, Paul is bossy, but it's like they could have solved that with a conversation with him. Because you can tell after George gets up and quits, which I've heard about for years that this happened in this during this time period. They didn't show it and let it be documentary, but you know that George gets up and storms out. And Paul is, you can see him like cry during this first episode. Like he's in tears when he's sitting there with Ringo and he's like, you know, now there's just two of us. You know, he's like, and he has
the speed with which he just goes, we'll get Eric.
Yeah.
John. Yeah. John
said, yeah. Oh, if he's not back by Tuesday. Yeah.
I'd always heard that quote too.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like Paul was devastated by the fact that George walked out. That just floored him. And so, and spoiler alert, next episode, you hear a conversation between John and Paul that was recorded, but with a hidden microphone. And it's like, you can tell Paul is totally caught off guard. Like he is being this way, but has no idea that he's coming across this way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, he is like devastated. And so a conversation, I think, with him would have fixed that long before this ever even came about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah, like some sort of managers.
That conversation takes place and Lennon calls him out. I don't know if we can do like a full three episodes on each one of these, but yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does call him out. Lennon does.
Yeah, finally. And it's like by that point, with George storming out and John calling him out, it's like it's you guys are doing this too late. The time to do this was long before that. Yeah. And yeah, like you say, it's like if you're going to have a band-only meeting, you can't bring spouses to that.
No, fuck no. It's just, yeah.
I mean, because it's like you're bringing somebody in there who's only hearing one side of the story and who's totally biased for you. That's why spouses can't testify against each other in court.
Yeah.
It's like it's going to be too one-sided. And it's like, especially Yoko, who has a reputation of being very abrasive and very confrontational. Yes.
She scares me.
You know, we keep having all these podcast-only meetings, and I wish you would stop bringing your
wife. Yeah, I mean, and even Joe agreed with me. It's like, yeah, you don't want to bring your
partners. Yeah, see, exactly. Partners. She agrees with you every time.
I will say that this dispels, and I never bought into the fact that Yoko broke up the Beatles. I never agreed with that. That is too simplistic.
It was just time.
She's a handy scapegoat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she's eccentric. She's a weird artist, you know.
What would you call what she's doing? I wanted to say undulating, but that's not
it. Yeah, it's undulating.
Ululating or like,
And I heard about that too. I heard
the subtitles I had on said vocalizing.
Vocalizing,
yeah. That would be the best.
Mine said batshit crazy.
Woo, avant-garde. It's like, I'd always heard that when George quit, it's weird. Whenever there's a tense moment, they start jamming. It's like their therapy.
Well, anytime you're in an awkward situation, if you have a guitar in front of you, you're just like,
here we go.
Yeah. I'm playing like, across the universe.
The dude on all the mics, every time like Yoko was on, I was like, where the fuck is Glenn and why is he not turned off her mic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's not a musician. She's an artist.
Yes.
And that's fine. Be an artist. Yes. Don't scream into the microphone.
Yeah.
We're making music here.
But yeah, I'd heard that after George quit, they did like a crazy thrashing wild session, like of her screaming and them. It was like they were trying to work out all their frustration.
I imagine the instruments. That like Yoko and John like would go home and then just fill balloons full of paint and then throw them at walls and then go and have wild lovemaking
on the paint.
Yeah. Yes. On the paint. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it got nasty.
Mm.
Yeah. Nasty.
I mean, so looking just off the first episode alone, Yoko really wasn't that obtrusive. She was just kind of sitting there.
She was just there.
She was just there.
Sitting there like ring girl.
Yeah.
On like next to him the whole time. Like
in the circle.
Yeah.
And I think that's what George and John got into the altercation about. When they got into actual physical,
get this fucking bitch out of here.
George was like, "You agree with me. You're not saying anything. You're letting, because supposedly Yoko did all the talking during the meeting that didn't go well.
Yeah,
she did all the talking for John, and George was like, "What the fuck is going on? You're on my side. You're not talking." And that's the other thing about Paul being bossy was John complained for the rest of his life about Paul.
Yeah.
Rearranging his songs. Yep. And George Martin. He said they, you know, Strawberry Fields, Lucy, well, all these songs, they stepped in and rearranged them. Oh, they stepped over me. He complained about all up until the last interview he gave before he died. He was complaining about that. But you watch him when Paul is trying to rearrange Don't Let Me Down at the beginning of this. John is just sitting there and not saying a word.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you felt that strongly about it, why didn't you speak up? Same thing with George. Like, why aren't you guys like talking to him? Paul was the best man in George's wedding. It's like, it's not like they're not close.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why can't you like just tell him that?
Well, and that's where I thought that like they just knew the time was coming. It was like, I keep seeing in Todd's corner house here, the Beatles anthology, which is when I fell in love with the Beatles. But like there was the thing, I think in the very first episode that was released, that anthology, that said that it was just reported that George was not a great musician. Mm-hmm. They were like, it didn't come naturally. Like
songwriter. Yeah.
So yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It didn't come naturally like Paul. And so I'm sure with like George, it had like a little bit of inferiority or insecurity about it. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh man, like
inferiority.
I just can't produce what these guys can produce. Mm-hmm. And then when he gets a song that they're just like, it's okay.
I'm going to look at this one.
But these songs are fucking iconic nowadays.
Yeah.
But so I'm sure he had like the most frustration. Mm-hmm. But the same with John. It's like, you know, I, we weren't there. We don't know these people. But like, I could also see, you know, them being like, you know what? We're just going to collect the paycheck. We're going to keep moving on. Mm-hmm. Especially with John. I think John was like, I just don't give a shit anymore. He was like, who gives a fuck? That's how I take it in this first episode. He's like, I'm done with this. John
wanted to move on to different things.
Yeah,
he was ready to go on to like, I want to be an artist. I want to show the world.
Artist, not a musician.
When they brought that up, How We Won the War, it was like, that was so cool. It was like, I saw you in the movie. And I was like, I thought that was such a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, I think John was just zoned out, but Paul, I think, wanted to keep the band together, and he was just trying to do it.
Yeah.
Ringo didn't give a flying fuck about anything, clearly.
Yeah.
And I think George was just fed up. It was just like every member of the band was just wanting something different.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoko, I don't think, helped or hurt anything, but it's a great scapegoat.
All of their solo outings afterwards,
within like a year?
Like, In my opinion... they could have been better had they had the additions of any of the other Beatles. If they had had the input of they were all great. Like most of Paul McCartney and Wings and George Harrison solo stuff and Lennon. I don't know shit about Ringo's solo stuff, I'll be honest.
You don't want to. It's fine.
But need to.
But like seeing this documentary and seeing them, you know, bring in their songs and like, hey, I learned this little ditty, and then someone's like, oh, that's great. And what if it went da 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 da? Like, it's just, you know, two heads are better than one is all I can think of.
And four is better than two.
Three. God love Ringo, but he didn't obviously.
He laid down some iconic beats.
Yeah,
and somebody said at the either on mic or off that Ringo maybe said 40 words during this.
But he still had, honestly, you watched him contribute some stuff his defense, like
solidarity.
He has some very iconic moments in Beatles songs and you watched him compose it in the moment on on this documentary.
And even
which
George.
One did he do on the first one?
You know, the doot 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 doot.
No. It's like George said this much later in an interview where he was like, you know, Ringo, when you put him onto your drums, like whenever I have him come play on one of my songs, like after the Beatles broke up, he's like, once he starts playing, it suddenly sounds like a Beatles song once Ringo's on it. Like wow. He knows that Beatles like that sound.
That signature sound, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, no matter what I'm doing, once Ringo starts playing, now it sounds like the Beatles.
Shit.
Yeah.
He does seem like they're rock. They're one that steady would the glue that would hold them together. But hearing that he was the first one to leave, I'm like, again, Jesus, what are you gonna do with this better than that?
In the intro, when they're talking about the formation of the band, I think the line that is used is that they pulled the best drummer in the city that they were in, and I was like, oh, the best drummer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably the most reliable drummer for sure, because of the drummer they had would skip out on gigs.
But Pete Best?
Pete Best, yeah. He was notorious for like flaking out at the last minute. And it's like, well, we got to find another drummer. And that's how they found Ringo.
I'm sure he's very sad about
that. Yeah, set your alarm better,
buddy. Yeah. I'm sure he's a little sad.
Yeah.
He's
like, note to other artists out there, set your alarm, be reliable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might be in the Beatles.
Especially if you're a drummer, you need to be able to like keep time.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. But yeah, I'm looking forward to finishing up. We're up to the very second half of the final episode.
They're long, but they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would watch more.
Sometimes really it's like you're watching band practice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like you're sitting in on conversations among like very close friends.
Yeah. Yes. I've heard Get Back about 15 times more than I wanted to in the last few days. I'm like,
that's what Joe said.
Especially they start playing and then they stop and then they start. It is kind of funny when they're just fucking around and Lennon is just making up words or like doing funny voices. Oh, and shit.
It's like they're just doing bits the entire time. Yeah. But some of those honestly hilarious.
I'm surprised because some of the like just dumb bullshit SNL type humor that Lennon is given, like some of them are like dynamite lines, and you're like, why didn't you write that down? Like that's a good fucking line.
My favorite is when they're like, John, you keep wearing the same outfit. And he's like, yeah, whenever they cut it all together, you're all going to look like crazy people wearing different outfits. I'm going to look like I'm wearing the same one.
Yeah. I'm doing the continuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they have a great like chemistry with each other.
Great rapport.
Yeah. There's great like comic timing between the four of them. And it's kind of fun to watch. It's like, but you know, I'm curious to see you guys get to the second episode when Billy Preston comes in.
Oh yeah. Good old
Who's
Billy.
Billy Preston.
And it's like
the fifth Ted Beatle. Theodore Logan.
The fifth Beatle.
It's like, you know, and it, I won't spoil it for you, but it's like he definitely changes the vibe. Yeah. And it's like
he was on the White Album too, wasn't he?
This was the first album he was on. They had a guy named Nicky Hopkins on the White Album play.
Because they were complaining they really needed a fifth person. They were wanting way more keyboards. Mm-hmm. They were like, how are we doing, you know, can I switch from bass to keyboards? And we don't have bass, we don't have one.
Yeah, and they actually had that conversation. Yeah, yeah. Billy Preston.
And they wanted to make him, they were like, John was all about it. He was like, fuck it, let's make him the fifth Beatle. I'm cool with it. I don't give a shit.
And then Paul was like, it's tough enough to agree with four of us. Imagine having another voice.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm curious to see what you guys think once he comes in. It changes the whole vibe of the whole. And I will say Peter Jackson has a narrative. Like he's constructed a storyline that ends with the concert that they play at the end of it. So there's an actual flow to the story.
Oh, PJ.
So, you know, I wouldn't have known that was possible out of constructing stuff out of them rehearsing and jamming and screwing around and, you know,
old PD Jacks.
And the director, Michael, will continue seeming like a dick.
Yes.
Like, could you just shut the fuck up, man?
And I will say, it's like, it's amazing to watch them pick up and jam. I don't remember how much they do this in the first episode, but it's like just random, like 50 songs and like old time.
I love how great Peter Jackson is at like quoting the songs that they're playing and like showing it up on this. It's like, here's this random Dylan song that they're playing.
Yeah.
Here's this random other song that they're playing. Here it is. Like they just play it.
They're just encyclopedias for music.
It's incredible.
Like, but the really cool thing is when they're playing a song and it pops up and it says, hey, this song or this cut of this song actually wound up on the album. Mm-hmm. Like it's this one. And it's like, he's playing Let It Be and John Lennon is in the background like mouthing the words and just fucking around and you're like, oh shit, that's the one they use with John Lennon like fucking around in the background. Like obviously, again, I don't know how to explain it other than they're just throwing shit at the wall and to see what sticks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've had a lot of fun watching that happen. So
it's great.
It's an album I've heard 1,000 times.
All 3 episodes, well worth the watch. I mean, it might be some background music or whatever, but yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. It's almost like reality TV, but the Beatles.
Yes.
So that's been great.
Also, if I can, the last thing, this was, a great template to see how like a great band makes a song, and just like, you know, one person brings a nugget of a song and a hook, maybe two. Somebody else adds to it. They build, and then they just like mumble rap over some of the bullshit. They're like, all right, there should be words there. I don't know what they are yet. Mm-hmm. And then you see them work out all together, like other things that can fit in there. They have one dude comes in and writes it down so they can remember that shit.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's a how-to for dummies, how to make a song.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's also
really interesting to watch.
I mean, we're all musicians here, right?
Not me.
I mean, that is not at all how, like, writing music. It's hard. Like, it does not come that easily. Like,
they make it look easy.
They make it look easy because they are super practiced and they're very, very talented.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason that they were as big as they were.
I mean, it's like
we're watching it on scene.
The Chicago Bulls, where it's like, oh, this is how, like, a great team, like, gets ready for a game and, like, you know, practices their offense and defense. Like, oh, yeah, that's great. That looks easy.
Let me apply that to my little league
game.
Well, imagine.
Let me grab a basketball and see
imagine
how it goes.
Being able to see this in its entirety. Because, Taylor, I have seen 2 or 3 or more bands, like garage bands that you've been in, and I've sat in on grunge like bands. Rehearsals.
Yes.
Good old makes Nova, you a grunge band? Good old Tubby McGraw back in the day. But, like, but this seemed seamless. Like, having that to watch as a template, like, I feel like would have been...
Because they were good.
They were
like, incredibly talented.
Because it was like, I was terrible. And it was like, but it's like... But you know, it really does just go to show. It's like, I'm not the one to say that practice makes perfect, because you can practice all you want, but if you don't have a gift... And it was like, these guys all had gifts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I feel like we've been bashing on Ringo... Ringo had something.
He did.
Like, I mean, he was able to keep up with everything. He, you know, and
he was a natural drummer.
Yeah,
right time, right place. That's the thing.
It's like, so it's like they all had gifts, and again, that was the most impressive thing to me. It was like to see, like,
Taylor. What was your favorite band name that you were in?
I think Tubby McGraw.
Yeah,
I think Tubby McGraw. Was
Tubby
the best.
McGraw.
Tubby McGraw. Yeah.
What was it? You were in Nova.
And then. I'm going to forget the name of it. Shit, I can't remember now.
Tell you what, I was in a band called Furious George.
Ooh.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Damn.
I like that.
Yeah.
This has been another episode of And we thank you very much. And so, yeah, we will come back and do some more. We'll do some Christmas movies, and we may come back and circle around and finish up the Beatles documentary. I'm curious to see what we think about the final. We may bundle them up and do a final, too.
We can do a bundle.
Yeah.
Good and, bundle.
You know, get everybody's thoughts.
The old bundle room.
Yeah. It's a lot to process. It's a lot of info, especially if you're a fanatic.
Bundle Rooney.
Yeah. So, it's like, you know, cable, internet, plus landline phone. So, anyway, we will see you guys next time.
Love you. Not with a bang, but with a...
Not with a whimper, but yes.
Whimper?
Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
No. He's all wimpy
but don't
over
you
here.
Know, it's
I've
like...
I've got blisters on my fingers.
You need to get some Cialis so we go out with a bang.
What?
Watch out for the campy drawing of Queen Victoria.
Help us.
Help us. You can listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwatfermovies.com.